A Nickel's Worth of Beads by Windsor Blue. Read by Rhea314. We were walking along St. Charles Avenue, Catra and I, when a little bit of magic happened, just for us. Catra came to New Orleans to study the city. Winter Enterprises is in the process of building replicas of the great American cities on L2 to try and bring the colony some prosperity. They're about halfway done with Nueva Los Angeles, the first of the L2 renovation projects, and now it's time to begin planning the next. So Catra's scouting for new ideas. That's his story, anyway. Troa will say he's here because Catra's here. But he's having a good time, I can tell. Troa's not really such a mystery. Once you've been around him for a little while, you can tell what he's about pretty easily. As for me, well, I guess I'm here because my brother thinks I need a vacation, and his boyfriend agrees, and once the two of them have their mind set about something, there's no living with either of them until they get their way. Adopted brother, I guess I should say. We're too chicken to take the blood test to find out for sure. As much as we tell each other it wouldn't matter either way, neither of us can face the idea of finding out that we're not actually related. It's as if we're afraid we'll lose our reasons to be siblings if we find out we really aren't. I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about the magic. This whole city is a little bit of magic, if you ask me. It wears its history like a fortune teller wears her earrings, big and loud, as much of a part of the person as of the persona. Colony cities don't have the history to wear like that, and I never realized before how much they're lacking because of it. People talk to you on the streets, and seem like they mean it, when they ask you how you are. Every building, every door and every window frame is bright and interesting, even the ones that are slowly dying, especially those, since they're dying so gracefully and elegantly. Every balcony begs to be stood upon. When strange men flirt with you as you walk by, they're so polite that it hardly seems like flirting at all. I feel pretty here, pretty and alive, with a little bit of magic coursing through my veins as it does through the very streets. The rooms we're renting overlook Royal Street, not far away at all from Bourbon Street bars, where girls flaunt their bodies for baubles and adulation, no matter what time of year it is. Mardi Gras was a couple of weeks ago, and yet they're still there, leaning over the balconies with bosoms bared. It's not really so different from throwing knives at a circus, all a performance, done for the sound of an audience clapping just for you. Troa scoffs as we walk by them in the evenings. He says it's an awful lot of trouble to go to for a nickel's worth of beads. Catra laughs at the whole spectacle, not maliciously. He finds it all a bit exotic and surprising, but sort of charming nonetheless. The idea of people being able to let go of their everyday shells and be someone else for a few hours appeals to him more than he can explain. Over beignets and coffee this morning, Catra decided he wanted to explore, so exploring we went. We walked for a good time, finally losing Troa, when he submerged himself in the museum at the Cabildo. He stood reading the labels on the wall as Catra and I tapped our feet, finally shooing us off with a promise he'd catch up with us later. Personally, I think he was just tired of walking, but no matter. Catra took my arm like the gentleman he'll always be and led me out into the quarter, and somewhere along the line, we ended up walking down St. Charles. I think Catra would have walked all the way to the end of the Garden District if I hadn't reminded him that Troa would be looking for us soon. So we turned around at Lee's Circle and headed back towards the quarter. St. Charles is one of the streets the parades use during Mardi Gras. There's a streetcar that runs down it from the quarter to the Garden District. It's a wonderful, rattling old thing that sounds like it ought to fall apart while you're on it, but manages not to. It runs on a track down the middle of the street, with an electric wire above it powering it. The wire is held up by suspended cables strung over the street between the street lamps on either side, and all over these wires are the stray beads that got caught there after being thrown from the floats. All along the street, there are beads hanging down the cables and in the trees, like Christmas lights or fallen stars in fading, gaudy colors. They're unintentionally beautiful. I couldn't help but love them. As we were walking past a small park, Lafayette Square, I think it's called, a sudden gust of wind stopped us in our tracks, and in the middle of it, I felt something solid but small hit me in the head. I rubbed the spot, and looked around on the ground, only to have it happen again. I heard Catcher laugh a little, and I turned to look at him. There he stood in the middle of the sidewalk, his hands up and open to the sky, slowly and steadily filling with the weather-beaten strands of Mardi Gras beads. He smiled at me and reached for my hair, pulling a broken string of about 10 purple beads from my wayward curls. Another strand landed on my shoulder, and he took it up and draped it over my neck. The wind blew again, and more beads fell around our feet. Seconds later, we were laughing together, decorating each other with plastic and fraying string. The beads felt cheap in my hands. Troa was surely right about their worth, but I wouldn't have given them up for anything. At that moment, they were jewels. They were gemstones. They were magic, crystallized, solidified, and presented to us in velvet-lined boxes. Once we were done, we laughed again, Catra nearly doubling over with it. "We look ridiculous," he proclaimed happily. "Troa's just going to die when he sees us," I giggled. "You're right," Catra beamed, and suddenly I realized exactly what my brother saw in him. Not that I hadn't known before, but it was so much clearer. For that moment, I could see Catra's soul, and if I hadn't loved him already, I would have from then on. He grabbed my arm and said, "Come on, let's go find him." And I ran willingly alongside him, thanking Troa's lucky stars that he had found this man to love. We found Troa at the corner of St. Charles and Canal Street. He was just about to board the streetcar to hunt for us, and he gave us a look that said he thought we had gone completely mad. "What have you got all over you?" he asked. And when we burst into laughter, instead of answering, his eyes narrowed and he demanded, "And what did you have to do to get them?" "We didn't have to do anything," Catra grinned, making a grand gesture at the sky. "They were gifts from on high, blessings from above, right, Kathy?" "Right," I nodded, with a grin. I couldn't have held back for the wide world. Troa looked at us suspiciously for a few seconds before finally taking my other arm and guiding us gently back into the quarter. He gave us a small smirk and said, "Whatever it was you did, I'm sure it was a lot of trouble for a nickel's worth of beads." Catra looked down at me and winked. "Not a nickel's worth of beads. Two fistfuls of the city itself." When I leave New Orleans next week, I'm taking two fistfuls of the city with me. And when I get home, I'm putting them in a velvet-lined box and keeping them for when I need a little bit of magic just for me. Finn. If you enjoyed this story, please leave feedback for the author, which you can do at windsorblue17@yahoo.com. Thanks for listening!